Hello, everybody. It is not Friday. It is, in fact, Thursday. But I am PT Carroll, and this is The Crack. I know. You're expecting the boys in the back to be here. They usually do Thursdays. I'll tell you what happened. You know, everybody was going to Miami for this whole thing, this big Jake Paul v. Anthony Joshua thing. And they said, PT, please, will you please come? And I was like, listen, I don't want to miss The Crack on Friday. They were like, well, here's the thing. You know, none of us are going to do the shows. We're all going to leave our shows because Jake Paul is so cool. And we're going to go and cover that event. And I was like, hang on a second. There's going to be no Crack if I leave. So they're just going to see out the year with no Crack. People be fiending for Crack if we don't do one last show of the year. So while New York Rick, Mysterious Frank, GC, they all left and they said, you know, we're picking Jake Paul over the audience. PT Carroll is here. The Crack is here. And Chuck Mendenhall is here. Chuck Mendenhall, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for doing this. You know, it's nice when people are committed, Chuck, because the same can't be said for every single person that works on this show.
You know, I keep my arm loose in the bullpen just in case something like this happens, PT. You know what I mean? I think you gave me the call at about 9:30 this morning. You said, we're going to have to go on. Those guys are not here. I said, let's do this thing. Here we are. And we will not let our people down.
We won't, but, you know, Oscar Losev won't. Jordan Kamzan won't. But there's one omission here. And his name is big time Ben Folks. Of course. The request came in very late for him too. You know, an emergency, if you say you will. And he was just like, well, let me send you on my agent's phone number. And I said, Ben, surely we can just sort this out among each other here. And he said, listen, I'm driving, hung up.
Yeah.
Talk to the agent. He demand $10,000 to be on this show today. He said, that's the only way you're getting big time, Ben, folks. And therefore, we can't have him. I'm sorry
that's
he doesn't.
That's double what he normally gets to be on the show. That's ridiculous.
It's absolutely crazy to just double your fee like that at the drop of a hat. But that's big time, Ben, folks. That's, you know, play silly games, win silly prizes to a certain degree on my part.
The truth is, I'm not sure he really gave us an excuse, did he? He just kind of was like, I'm out. There was no questions asked. It was sort of like, I'm not doing it.
The Grizz did win.
Yeah, that's true. So he was pretty happy about that too. It looked like he had one of those 2 or 3 day hangovers going on.
I love them and hate them at the same time. They remind me that I am mortal, but they also remind me that I've had a fantastic time when I was doing that to myself. A double-edged sword, the multiple day hangover. But listen, we're not here to talk about hangovers, although there will be some incoming hangovers due to the festive season taking place in the next week. But before we get into everything we want to talk about, and we will be talking about Jake Paul and Anthony Joshua, we will be talking about Tom Aspinall and Cyril Gane being at each other's throats via social media. And we'll also talk about Movlid Kabeloyev and his failed drug test. And there's a few little bits we're going to get to too. But before all that, I need to plug the latest offering from Uncrowned Films, the Fight Circus docs. What is Fight Circus? As you can see there, the great Ariel Helwani in the Louis Theroux kind of role here with the great E.K.C. Leiden. A really, really brilliant, brilliant documentary once again. And just a bizarre world. And it's so well shot. You know, Casey is a savage, as we all know. We've all worked with him before. But there's one particular one in the kind of introduction section when Ariel arrives into this arena in Las Vegas that's going to host Fight Circus. And he's talking about how trippy all the graphics are. And Casey goes from filming him to spiraling around all one shot to come back to Ariel at the end. And I was like, who else could do this shit, man? Did you get to see it yet, Chuck?
I have not seen it yet, but I've the little pieces that they've ladled out, I'm definitely going to be watching it here soon, but like the little pieces they've ladled out, it's right up my alley. I mean, why didn't I think of this? You know what I mean? Like, you got a, what's his name? Charles Bennett. Like what? These guys, like when they resurface, anytime you see these guys resurface, like, oh shit, this guy, you know, it's like, there's always something fun about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is an absolute smorgasbord of combat athletes and combat personalities throughout this. But speaking of combat sport athletes and celebrities, Jake Paul v. Anthony Joshua, the fight we've all been waiting for, Chuck, is happening tomorrow in Miami. All the lads are there, as we said. The press conference last night, hosted by the one and only Ariel Helwani, fantastically done as always. But am I crazy in thinking, I thought there'd be more buzz. Maybe it's where I am in the world, but I felt like there would be a lot more buzz in the lead up to this, given how big the announcement was in the first place.
Yeah, you know, and I was supposed to be out there too. I was going to go out there and it was that sense of like, you know, I was worried about the FOMO, like if, and but that hasn't really been the case. And I guess that really plays to the point, right? Like it's more like happy of not being out there, homo, but like, that's not what the, but more the, but what I'm trying to say is like, I thought I would have that and I really don't because there, I don't know, maybe it's because, and I've heard like guys like Luke Thomas kind of talk about this a little bit, that the presentation of it, it feels so imbalanced competitively. Mm-hmm. Now, we've had this in the past, but it's usually for Jake Paul's favor. You're usually looking at something where you're like, dude, he's going to kill a 57-year-old Mike Tyson, or, you know, like he's fighting one of these other guys. Like you kind of look at it and you say, sure, pick on somebody your own side. But this is one of those weird situations where it tilts the other way. This should almost work if you're one of these people who, if you subscribe to the, I'll tune in the moment I think that Jake Paul will get his ass kicked. This should be the moment, right? So it feels like there should be buzz in the sense like, well, now he's bitten off more than he can chew. Now he's going against not only a real boxer, but a guy he has no business fighting. That's a complete opposite of everything we've seen in the trajectory of his career. And I don't think it's buzz. What I feel, honestly, is this little bit of like curiosity and concern. Like it's like this blend of like, I don't know how this plays out, but I've never felt so certain of an outcome in my life. Well, you know what I mean? In terms of, I don't know exactly how it plays out, but I know what's going to happen generally. You know what I mean? And I think that that's a weird terrain. And then that makes you think, okay, let's just say that this is all legit, that Jake Paul has no chance. Why is he doing it? You know, that's where so I get kind of caught up in the philosophy of this fight a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. And it's a great point to make in terms of the obvious outcome, because even though we were all pretty sure Jake Paul would win the fight with Mike Tyson, there was that old school boxing fan who hadn't actually been watching boxing for the last 30 years that was just a Tyson fan and was like, oh my right. God, this Disney kid, you know, like, right. You know, not even putting him in the world of boxing, essentially being like, this YouTuber, these guys that I hate so much is finally going to get their comeuppance. And obviously it played out the way it did, but you know, you're right in what you're saying in terms of, it does feel like, not a matter of how, but when. How long into this fight before Anthony Joshua catches this dude? And Joshua has been so businesslike in his demeanor in the lead up to this fight. Like, he has not for one second been like, oh, well, you know, I think this kid has a chance. You know, who knows? I mean, he seems to hit pretty hard. Every time he's asked about it, he's like, no, look, I'm a million times better than this dude. I'm on a completely different level to this guy. They were asking him yesterday, I believe it was Oscar Willis from the MacLife, asked him, like, when do you think is the last time you fought someone of Jake Paul's level? And he was like, oh, very early on in my career. Like, really? Like, I can't even, like, none of the guys that I fought recently, basically, like, way before that.
It's like flipping through his amateur file. Let's see.
Yeah, I'll find a dude. but is that kind of counteractive to the Jake Paul sell, right? Like, this guy is brilliant at selling. Do you think he's sitting there going, come on, mate, just pretend that I have a chance here to sell a few casual eyeballs to this event?
In part, though, don't you think, like, Jake Paul's, so his whole thing has almost been the bending of reality in general, like just in general, like just, we're going to bend reality to how I want reality to be. And we're going to do these things. We're going to shape perception the way we want it. You know, we're going to play audacious and we're going to do this and this. And I think that, you know, kind of going into a fight like this, that's how he looks at it. You know, like, you know, can he do it? Like, I think that, like, in most cases, logic would say, no, I mean, this is a ridiculous thing, but he's one of those guys who succeeded on so many weird levels now, like so many levels, almost everything he's touched has been a success that you're like, there's a little bit, if you're trying to find the Jake Paul magic or whatever it is, I know that some people see it as something else, but like whatever that is, this is what it would show up, right? Like he has an ounce of something that says, well, I don't know, like maybe he's got something that, you know, that how does he come out of this one on top? But I think that that's it, because every other thing about this fight, like I was kind of going down today, I did a column that should be running here pretty soon. You think about the trajectory of guys he faced. It was like there was a natural escalation of threat, but the threats were kind of, you know, like a little click more toward the danger red zone, but not a lot. Like, so it goes from, like, you know, Ben Askren, for instance, originally, to Tyron Woodley. Well, Woodley's a better striker, but neither one of these guys, they're both collegiate wrestlers who ended up in MMA. Neither one of them's a boxer, right? And then he goes to Anderson Silva. Well, Silva's a much better striker than both of them, but he's 47 years old. You know, and then it kind of goes from that on to the next to the next. This is one of those scenarios where you're just like, it has nothing to do with anything that he's done previously. That has nothing to do with it. Like, he just went from, you know, one planet to another in terms of what he's about to try to do. There's something about that audacity that still translates. And I think that that's kind of like, in a selling point, if you've actually followed his career and you've been, you know, if you take him semi-serious as an entertainer or a boxer, that's where the I guess the biggest intrigue is, because this is just not something he has no business really in there. I mean, it's one of those fights that I'm not sure everybody would sanction. You know what I mean? Like, it's the discrepancy so far apart.
Do you think, you know, you've mentioned like this kind of the audacity of what he's doing, the size difference we've seen on Air Jordan was playing the video clips of them facing off, and it's staggering, you know?
Crazy visual.
It's a crazy visual. It's as crazy as you and Ben mentioned before. It's the flip of what we were looking at with Tank Davis and Jake Paul. You know, look, it's like, this is the thing, right? You're looking at this guy doing this and he's like, look, he's trying to be funny and all, but like, it's like, this is like one of the best boxers of his generation.
It's
he's
like
not
those
past
videos
it.
Where like somebody's like, you know, messing with a zoo animal, at the, like a bear or something, and the bear finally mauls him. And you're like, well, what did you expect was going to happen there?
Why did you crawl into the lion cage? You know, like that was going to happen. But so people talk about Jake Paul and the things they say about him is like qualifying that he can punch. You know, like that's what they say about Jake Paul when he's in the lead up to a fight against Silva or Askren or Mike Tyson. Like, this guy, he can really hit. Well, you know, Anthony Joshua can really, really fucking hit. I don't really know how to explain this. Like, he is one of the greatest heavyweights of his generation. And to your point about the audacity and the size difference, that's just so obvious to even a child looking at this. Even with a loss, even if he's on skates within the first round of this, does he somehow win from this loss? Because he's like, who else would do that? Like, you know, he's going to try and turn this into a win for him somehow. Do you think he can do that because of how outrageous this task is?
I just wonder, to be completely honest, like, as I mentioned, I was writing a column, but what you start to really wonder is, okay, is this the big finale? Is this kind of like...
We've been saying that for a long time, though.
Yeah, I mean, is this kind of like, hey, man, if I'm going to go out, it's going to be in a blaze of glory. And I mentioned this, like, the last time I was talking about, like, you know, Bode from the original Point Break, where he's, you know, the 50-year storm. Yeah. He's like, I'm gonna go catch that wave one last time before it all crashes down on me. It has that feel, does it not? I'm like, is this just because... I wonder, and I mean, we'll see, obviously, like, you know, come Friday night late when the fight's over and we kind of get a better indication of things, like, we'll see where his head is, hopefully still on his body, but like, it's one of those things where I'm like, was this a moment where he's like, nah, man, I think I'm done. And now, he has not really given that kind of indication. In fact, he's only entrenched himself in the boxing game with the women's side of things, Amanda Serrano, everything else he's got going on. But it could also be that. It could also be that he's like, I don't know what I could do that's going to be like bigger than what I've done. And so I'm going to go in there, and this is, you know, people wanted to see me go up against somebody who was a Goliath. I'm going to go do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what does it do to the public's appetite as well, as a question I find myself, you know, like, as we're talking about the inevitability of what is about to happen here. Like, it's so weird that even if Jake Paul wins, I feel like that's negative for everyone too, because people are going to be so skeptical about,
oh my God,
even, you know, it's going to cause absolute uproar. So, right, if it goes the way we expect it to, he gets splattered by Anthony Joshua at some point. Do you think that takes away from the selling power of a potential Ngannou matchup, which we all feel is at play, which Ngannou himself, in that highly scrutinized interview with Ariel Helwani, said himself that he'll be watching very closely? Does Paul getting absolutely flatlined here very early, as expected, take away from the sell of an Ngannou fight? Or will people be like, well, maybe he can... What does that... Like, what is the sell there? Like, if it's just two guys that Anthony Joshua beat really quickly, like, is that intriguing?
Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think it is. I mean, there are times, and maybe you tell me the same thing. Like, you tell me. There are times I feel like maybe I'm just a little bit out of touch with what the public sees and wants out of Jake Paul. To be honest, I really don't know sometimes. Like, you know, when he was fighting like Tommy Fury, for instance, or he's, you know, I guess, you know, even going through the couple of dudes like who are like the no name, no Wikipedia type guys. And you're like, well, he's trying to build his resume, or he's trying to do it the right way, or he's trying to do this and that. Nobody wanted that. Nobody wanted that. I don't know what people want with this guy, but I would think if he goes in there and he just gets smoked first round, just gets obliterated with a big, you know, big right hand or whatever it is, and he just goes down. Similar, I guess, because it was a bad optic even for a guy like Francis Ngannou. Even a guy who stood in there with Tyson Fury and already proved that, hey, I can stand in there with a big-time heavyweight and survive. He gets smoked, and you're like, yeah, see, you can't. You can't for a guy who, like, a guy who's preparing for you and taking you seriously. That's kind of how we saw it. I don't know where he goes from that, because what more do you need to see from Jake Paul at that point? Like, what are you wanting to see from Jake Paul at that point? Because if he gets smoked by Joshua, it's like, well, do we really need to see Ngannou do the same thing to him? And would it still have any intrigue? Would you still believe that Jake Paul presents any kind of threat to Ngannou? Like, I don't know where, if that exists, I would admit freely that I'd be like, I'm not a connoisseur of Jake Paul, apparently. I just do not understand how to perceive this guy. Yeah. But I wouldn't, I would not have interest in seeing that. If he can't, and this is a tall ask, but if he can't make this somewhat competitive to show that maybe the boxing chops run deeper than we've even given him credit for or something like that, I don't really see why we'd have that appetite. You know,
you were asking earlier about how this came about, and I heard a few people in the boxing world speaking about this. They were kind of like, it was a desperation. When the Davis fight fell out, there was calls being made to so many people, like to see what would happen.
Yeah.
And I think the Joshua call was made by them guys being like, oh, he won't take this.
Right.
And then he's like, yes. And then meanwhile, Paul's people are on with Netflix, and Netflix are like, you're going to fight Anthony Joshua on Netflix?
Yeah.
And he's like, yes. So then he is a businessman. Of course, yeah. Jake Paul's obviously massively successful. He's trying to keep a relationship with Netflix, which is absolutely massive,
sure.
Which we said back when the Tyson fight happened, this was the most significant thing about the fight in terms of combat sports, the market it was opening up. So that doesn't really shock me if that was how it played out, right? Like, if it was a desperation thing, he was making promises to Netflix, talking about potential people he could get involved, and he lands on Anthony Joshua, and they're like, oh no, we really like that. And then Joshua says yes. It just kind of like, that feels like it's plausible, right?
Yeah. And I mean, like, obviously, if you're looking at Jake Paul from a Netflix standpoint as being like, oh, we might be able to get more events out of him, this could be the signal of an abrupt termination in that relationship. Because that it is, I mean, it's just, it's such a, you know, a striking absurdity to go from like Tank Davis. And we saw that face off. And again, there was small intrigue for me. And I know I was talking to you and Ben about this, who were more scoffing about it than I was, but I was like, well, the dude is very skilled. And it's like, there's a little bit of like, can he just, you know, use his prowess and his speed to somehow, you know, bewitch Jake Paul and win that fight. That kind of had this weird intrigue. But to see it go from that, and then to know they made the calls to what, Garcia, Francis Ngannou, who has to be kicking himself on some level.
Jesus Christ.
And then to end up with Anthony Joshua. I give, in a weird way, if it's not just this ploy of like, all right, man, I don't really care about the boxing side of it, you know, whatever's going through his head, I give him credit, because every single person who said, like, you need to fight somebody who, you know, your own size, your own weight, your own whatever, your own sport, like, you got to fight a guy who's in these things, he's doing that. Like, right? I mean, he's answering the call that everybody's been asking for him. And I think that there was a part of me in an early Jake, you know, Jake Paul, early in the experience, that would have never believed he'd do this. I never thought he would step in the ring against a guy like Anthony Joshua. Like, he would talk about it, but there's no way I would have actually believed he'd do that.
Yeah, and I mean, I wonder how he feels, right? Like, as much as a promotional guy he is and a, you know, a guy that knows how to sell, I wonder how he's feeling, like, when he's reading the quotes about Anthony Joshua saying, I essentially have a license to kill. You know, you
right.
Let me in there, you sanctioned this fight, you're saying you can kill him. And he's like, well, no, yes, that's definitely a good thing to say before a fight. But then you're like, could he legitimately... Because there is, right? There, like, as yes. much as we're laughing, like, there is...
I'm not
is...
trying to laugh.
No, like, no, I know, I know.
It's a wild thing.
But, like, that is the big concern out of all... Like, the same thing we were kind of saying about Tyson, right? We were worried about what could happen to Tyson. I am equally, as much as it's what everybody kind of is signing up to watch here, as much as people are like, we're signing up to watch Jake Paul get shadow realmed, mm-hmm. it's also like, how does that look like for everyone? If that, like, right. if he gets absolutely slept here and it could potentially go bad, that could be the end of this Netflix thing in the same vein as we were saying about Tyson, Mike Tyson a few months back.
I've said this to you guys before. It's like, you wish you could leave any Jake Paul fight feeling a little better than you do. I always feel like we come out of them a little bit like greasy feeling and like, ah, man, you know, and it's not just the Mike Tyson one. There was others, like even the Tommy Fury. It just felt so like, I don't know what. It just felt so unnecessary, I guess, the whole thing. Why did I just watch that, you know? And I remember the Nate Diaz one was kind of the one that we were lobbying for because we were like, Nate deserves that payday, all, you know, and we thought it might be compelling. It was not compelling. I didn't think it was compelling. It just kind of played out. I think that that's part of the problem. So now if you go into something like this and the optics are that he just gets completely obliterated, there's going to have, I don't know, but it's not going to be a feel-good thing. It's obviously going to carry an element of like guilty, you know, whatever you want to call it, of having watched it, right? Like, it's just, that's the way it is. The only way, and I mean, honestly, like you said, it's kind of a no win, or at least it presents itself that way, because if Paul goes in there and competes, what do you think we're going to hear? That Joshua carried him, like that we didn't want to put him way too early. We wanted to give the people a show, make it look like the little runt was in there, like putting his heart into it, and he couldn't get by him. You know, it's a weird setup, man. And it's going to leave, no matter what, I feel like people are going to be disappointed on some level. There's going to be some swell of, you know, the chorus saying whatever it is, or the fight fix, especially. Imagine if, I mean, and this is where, like, the fight game, I guess, the imagination is always it's the key of it all, right? Like, well, imagine if Jake Paul does land that shot, you know? It's like, just one of those things.
Are you saying, like, imagine he has a Francis Ngannou v. Tyson Fury moment?
Yeah. If it happens like that, where, even a moment, just a moment, yeah, where he just staggers him. I mean, I think in just in a real time sense, that could be crazy. But it also, dude, in our skeptical world right now of everything going on, you could see that I could already hear it all about the fix. You know, it's just, I don't know what the fight looks like that everybody's going to be happy with.
Yeah, that is a great point. One thing we do know, there is definitely incentive for Anthony Joshua to not just show up here and coast through this fight, because there are a lot of big time matchups on the horizon for him. One man heard his license to kill speech about Jake Paul, and he had a few things to say for himself over in Morecambe. This is Tyson Fury.
Just picked the kids up from school on a school run, Paris and the kids. And I've just been sent a video of Anthony Joshua talking about if he kills somebody, he kills somebody in a boxing ring. You know what? He's a little bit long in the tooth to be talking shite like that. He's 37-year-old at the end of his career, fighting a YouTuber, a Disney Channel guy, who Tommy B. And now he's talking about killing him and all that to try and sell. Please, barking up the wrong tree, idiot. Here's a fun fact. If I ever come across you, bum, I'm knocking you dead spark out. I ain't a YouTuber or a man half your size. I am him, the man. You're a classless loser, coming off a 15 months knockout defeat to a local lad. Imagine if someone from Morecambe knocked me out. You big bum, useless tosser. Get up, and I can't wait if Jake Paul knocks your spark out, you big bum.
You think Eddie Hearn's like this right now? He's like rubbing his palms together like, yes.
That's exactly what he's doing. Oh my God. Like,
you know what's the greatest part about that is... a YouTuber, a Disney Channel guy, a guy that Tommy beat.
All equal power.
Like, I know, they're all equal. Like, this guy has no credibility. Like, he's like some low shade there at his brother. I love it.
Can I ask you about how that half fits? Because I don't know. It doesn't seem to fit as well as a Chuck Mendenhall special. Did he? He's had a sizing issue there, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, he's wearing... I like the flat caps. He's got one of those ones, got like more of, I don't know what they call this exactly, like kind of more of a puffy brim there. And he's wearing a little high on his head, you know? So maybe it is it's a fit thing. I don't know. But he still looks pretty good. I mean, accent comes off better because he's wearing it. I think that it makes sense to him.
It's something that like it amplifies the whole thing when you've got your entire family in one vehicle as well. Yeah. Like, you know, and you pan around, like, you're not like here hiding in the background there. You're like full kid mode here. Just need to pull in and make a video about Cave and Anthony Joshua's so head hilarious. In. Like, fire away, Dad.
Why does everybody do it? We've talked about this before, but what is the impulse when people are on the road or like in their cars at least?
Road rage, maybe? They're like, do you know what? I need to get this out of my
system. Maybe when the thoughts are clearest, you're like, I guess.
Well, the world will be watching. There's no doubt about that. Like, and that is the truth. Like, as much as we're kind of saying no buzz, blah, 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 I feel like it's going to be massively viewed. Like, there's going to be massive numbers attached to this as well. Like, all my mates have been asking about it. They're not, like, buzzing to see it or whatever. But it's so easy to just turn on Netflix and check this out. Like, I feel like it's going to do massive numbers.
And it's going to, like, it's one of those things in prospect, I think a lot of people are probably like, you know, whatever that's coming up. But in the way that, like, if you knew a football game or whatever's coming up on Friday night, you just kind of put it away until you get there. I think maybe by the time you get to tomorrow night, Friday night, and everybody's just kind of like now fixing into what they're going to do that night, that's probably when you'll feel it, that it's about to happen and people will talk about it and you'll get the random text from somebody like, what the hell's Jake Paul thinking here, or whatever it is. Like, I feel like that's when it's all going to happen is on fight night.
Should we mention Anderson Silva, 50-year-old Anderson Silva, be Tyron Woodley? Like, is that?
No, I'm just kidding. We can mess with him if you want.
But I mean, like, I get that these guys are icons and brilliant mixed martial artists. It doesn't do anything for me. I look, fair play to the lads. I'm glad they're making money. It's just, it's not for me.
I've talked about this quite a bit. You know, when like, I mean, would it matter to you, I guess, if this was an MMA fight? Like, if Anderson Silva's fighting Woodley right now, 50 years old versus whatever Woodley is, would that matter to you? And would that speak to you on any level?
I'd say on a bad level, it would speak to me. You know,
I guess it's really weird when two MMA guys who are very good at it, they're both champions,
brilliant,
decide like, let's do it with boxing gloves, because maybe I'm the one who's wired wrong on this, but I'm like, well, MMA, the reason MMA was more desirable to watch and to cover than boxing was the possibilities were way more. Like, you had a lot more, there were a lot more offensive elements, there was a lot more defensive elements, there was a lot more nuance, way more ways to finish a guy. Like, so there was all these different things. So when you go the opposite way and you say, like, now we're just going to put on boxing gloves and we're not like highly, highly skilled boxers, but we're just older MMA guys, it never does it for me. I mean, I almost don't think there's a matchup of anybody, because Anderson Silva would be the guy that you would want to see in this scenario because he was one of those dynamic strikers within MMA. But for whatever reason, man, I've just never been able to acquire the taste of the MMA guys who face each other in the boxing ring. It just has never happened for me, you know?
No, I agree. I agree completely. In fact, I'll be so disappointed if the Diaz-McGregor thing is settled in a boxing match, which I do think is a possibility. Like, it's obviously the clock is running out on that anyway, being like a very intriguing fight. But if they were to settle that, and
is it running out more on Diaz now at this point than it is McGregor, or both?
Both. I think. Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know. I think they got to do it next year. Let's just not do it.
Yeah.
Let's move on from this 10 years ago or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Let's move on to MMA, because that is what we usually talk about.
Sometimes.
And, you know, we got a message there earlier, didn't we, Chuck, that we would be glazing Tom Aspinall today and shitting all over Dana and John Jones.
That, yes. Yeah.
So here it goes. This is the segment. Tom Aspinall had told Ariel that he was going to be a new evil Tom Aspinall. I'm not going to be as nice to everyone, he said. Cyril Gane, you know, just posting some cool snaps of him and Toi Tuivasa getting down. Just, you know, felt cute, might delete later, you know, puts it up. And he said, no date yet. Tom Aspinall. Well, this is the evil Tom Aspinall I think we've all been waiting for. No shit, there's not a date yet. I'm not medically cleared to fight and about to have surgery thanks to your disgusting fingernails. Thumbs up. Emoji. I'll be back to smash your face in soon, you cheat. Chuck, your thoughts, please.
Well, I'm not opposed to Tom Aspinall kind of like, you know, if he feels like this is a tact for him to kind of get back in there and for people to care on a bigger level, go for it. And honestly, like, he probably has been too nice. Like, there were so many times and through the course of the John Jones ducking thing that he took a high road And you're like, we're not used to these high roads in fight game. What are you doing? You know, like he would kind of like talk about it from, well, you know, and he would still give John his flowers and he would kind of talk about it in a way that was kind of down to earth. I don't mind, man. Like you're getting with the times if you're going to carry a little chip on your shoulder, and he should. You know, I think that with this is probably more aimed always at Dana White, right? And the UFC, because, and I know that you've talked to his dad and this has been made clear, but they haven't done a good job with him, man. You know, it's like they just haven't done a good job. Like they've, I don't know if they ever really marketed him to get him to the point where the fans would rally behind. I don't think they've gotten behind the UK thing enough. I don't think that, you know, that he was championed enough by Dana White, especially during that victory lap when he's talking about John Jones being the, Dana White was talking about John Jones being the GOAT and the pound for pound king. And you have this guy who threatens all of that and has something to say about it. Like, I just didn't feel like, and I'm sure the cumulative toll of that, especially in a situation like this, where Dana was dismissive a little bit, you know, of the eye poke and the injury, it probably adds up. It probably does add into some kind of like, you know what? I'm fed up with this shit. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's probably where he's at right now. You know, like you tell me, you've had the temperature of that room for a long time, but that's how it strikes me.
Yeah, it's kind of like, do you know when you're in high school or secondary school, if you're from the UK and Ireland, and one of your mates starts going out with a girl when he's like 14 and he's just love struck and he'll do it. He's like, you know, she's the best thing ever. Oh, you know, this is the best. I just want to spend all my time with this girl and what a wonderful time this is. And, you know, one day the girl just says, you know, fuck you. I'm going to, you know, I don't want to be with you anymore. And then you see the guy in his next relationship a few years down the line. And it's a very different approach that he's taking. Like that's like, even though Thomas, I'm not trying to say he's had an easy time. Like he had the knee thing with Blades, but the game was always on his side. Like everybody was always like, I can't wait for Tommy to come back. I can't wait to see what he does here. The game flipped on him that night with the eye gouging gate. And I think this is his response, being like, you know, like fuck this shit. Like, you know, why do I, like, what are you talking about? Cyril Gane saying like, I have no, of course you don't have a date yet. I'm getting a needle in my fucking eye in the next few weeks, you know? I actually like it. And I think Cyril Gane should like it too, because do you remember the way we felt about that matchup and the way up to it? I was one of the few guys being like, I think it's an interesting fight.
Yep.
Nobody was having a bar of it. Am I crazy to think that a rematch between Gane and Aspinall could be one of the most anticipated fights of 2026? Am I getting way too excited by saying that?
No, I mean, I think it will be in the sense that we love resolution, right? And I think that it was such a visible thing. It's going to be far bigger than the first match because of the reasons you said. I think most people saw it as like a consolation. Well, this is the consolation we get because they couldn't get John Jones and Tom Aspinall in the same room. And so here's Cyril Gane. And we used to joke about that. Well, this ended up being Cyril Gane. And sure enough, it's Cyril Gane. But the greatest part of this is that Cyril Gane, even without, you know, the eye gouge, was holding his own just fine. It was setting the table for a very good fight. And I think that that's what people will think about. And that's honestly what the UFC should latch onto when they're selling this fight again, is that, hey, this thing was kind of going in a very interesting path. We're used to seeing Aspinall go in there and just destroy guys in a round or less, you know, and it's just, that wasn't going to be the case. So I think that there will be bigger intrigue. And if there's some bad blood to it, it's all at a, you know, more power to it. But I will say that at least people are talking about Aspinall this time through. I felt like the last time, you know, whatever amount of months it was, where he, you know, since the interim defense or whatever to the time he steps back in there, it just, he didn't really have, like, it was weird. He kind of kept himself in the talk, but it was not with like a, you know, it wasn't like this fiery thing to talk about Tom Aspinall, but it kind of feels that way now. And I feel like it's because he has that chip on his shoulder. And I think he kind of finds himself defensive because he's proven a lot, but nobody gives him that credit really. You know, and you have so many people mocking him and stuff. I feel like it's a, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see what he comes back as.
One of my friends was saying this to me like a week ago. He was kind of saying, imagine being legitimately a guy who can be like, I am one of the greatest fighters in the world. I'm a heavyweight. Like, this is the maximum weight class you can fight in. I can destroy most men in the world. Maybe all, like, you probably have a good argument for all of them. And there's people being like, what a, you know, oh, know. This guy backed out of a fight. He didn't want it. Like, imagine how fucking frustrating that is. Like, every day. I know for a fact that Aspinall does so much media on fight week. Things that champions, you know, they tend to taper off, as we know, as media guys.
Yeah.
When they get the belt, they're all for it. And then it's like, all right, well, maybe we'll do a bit less of this. I'm not doing every single one of these things. Tom sits there and does every single one of them. I can imagine a very different approach next time. I can imagine him protecting his energy a lot more. Like, being like, why am I giving these people my time? Like, it's clear based on what he said to Ariel that there is a bit of disdain for how the UFC treated him, which, you know, we talked about at the top of this segment.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to understand where he's coming from in that regard. But I do expect the reaction, and I'm very intrigued to see that, because I don't expect a different Cyril Gane necessarily. I'm just expecting a very different Tom Aspinall and a very different context and just backdrop to the fight in terms of public perception, which is very, very exciting for me.
Yeah, and your biggest hope is that this thing doesn't drag on in some way where he loses an enormous amount of time again, because you would then he'd start to take on the look of one of those guys. You're like, man, if we could have only replaced, what could have been those 3 years with or whatever it is of his prime that you never got. And I'm like, that's what I, for him, you know, and for us, like, you want to find out, obviously, why do you watch the game? Why do you watch MMA? Why do you watch UFC? Well, it's always to find out who's the best is, right? This is what fuels the whole thing. I don't want to not know through this era if Aspinall was that guy or not. You know, it's like at some point you want to be able to have those answers. So I just hope it's not like a long, you know, I hope that whatever's going on with his eye, that they get it solved and he feels like he's good to go sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. Like, we genuinely don't know when this is going to happen, if this will happen. Like, he could not eliminate the idea of never fighting again on that Ariel interview. And that's so sad.
Can you imagine if he...
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine if he... Like, you know, we've seen some divisions in the past that they kind of go sideways and they never... Like, they go off on a detour and it's almost like they never kind of return. Like, the Conor McGregor thing did this a little bit. But, like, that heavyweight division... Given where, you know, going back to Francis Ngannou and like where it ended up with Jones and then the way that Aspinall, and then for him to not, and then for Gane, I mean, it would be like one of those things you'd be like, this makes no sense. Like, this was the most, jagged path ever, and it just strayed off. It never came back. We never got back on course to anything of what we thought we were going to get. I hate that. That's the one thing about this situation that I'm like, let's not have that, man.
Yeah. Is the word cheat too extreme? Like, obviously, we heard his definition of the situation, and you can understand if the dude is going through the thing he's going through. And we saw the video of Andy, his father, breaking down the video of the constantly extended fingers and being like, well, what else is that? If you're doing this every time this guy's trying to engage you in a fight, what else is it? Do you think that's how the public see this, or do you think it's so regular, it's so normal to see eye pokes in MMA that it's just not going to feel that way?
Well, that's why it feels, to say cheat is very deliberate, right? Like, you're a cheat, you deliberately did this. I don't know if he deliberately did it, you know. Was he incautious with it? Maybe. But I'm like, I don't know if that's why that feels extreme, that's all. But, you know, if you want to do that, then, and especially Tom Aspinall, be careful of the John Jones request, because that's a guy who always has his fingers out. And, you know, you have multiple players over the course of time who've been like, he's the worst eye poker there is, you know. Yeah. You talk to Dom Reyes and, dude, get him going on it sometime. It's like, he's very mad. You know, Glover Teixeira has his share of that story. You know, it's like you talk to certain guys and they're like, man, he's a bad offender when it comes to eye pokes. So, but a cheat, like, you know, I don't know if I'd go that far. If Cyril Gane comes out and says, like, yeah, I was like, I did it on probably, like, all right, he's a cheat, you know.
I did it. I was trying to gouge his fucking eyeballs out, okay? But isn't it just curious to fathom how John Jones would be refereed in 2026? Because we have seen a clear reaction to that heavyweight fight. It is not, they are not messing around with that shit anymore. If you're coming in like this, there's way more warnings than usual. And John's just like this.
Yeah. I know.
Every job is like,
you know that's what's so funny. We were talking about like Fight Pass, and you're like, well, what happens to Fight Pass? And what you like the library. But if you ever go back and watch old fights, it's crazy how the like the minor things that start to happen. But like you're mentioning guys like that, that used to be just common. Like guys did this all the time. Like it's a lot different these days. And at least in some way, if you go back and watch like earlier fights, and I'm not talking like, you know, pre-Zuffa. I'm talking about like 15 years ago, you know, or even 12 years ago. Like so many people were doing that sort of thing. And they've at least kind of planted it enough where there's been small change through the time. You know what I mean? Like we sometimes are like, oh, everything's exactly the same. I think there are some minor, like minor details that are getting sorted out over the course of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out. And hopefully we hear that Tom is ready to get going sooner rather than later. These things can't be rushed. He's still going through it, which is absolutely crazy, you know, and that needle in the eye. I mean, I hope they knock him out for that shit. Like, how could you they have to give him some anesthetic for that. There's no way you're expected to sit there with a massive needle.
No.
Eye, right?
That's horrible to think about. Don't even talk
this
about
is
that.
This is the worst shit that's ever happened.
It's supposed to be a Christmas show, man.
Yeah, fuck, sorry. Hey,
Crackmas.
Yeah, Crackmas. Okay. On to more depressing news. Movlid Kabalayev of the PFL, their featherweight tournament champion, has pissed hot Chuck. He is going to... Let me just get this PFL post up here. Here we go. The PFL, the Professional Fighters League, has been notified by the United States Anti-Doping Agency that athlete Movlid Kabalayev tested positive for a banned substance following his bout at the 2025 PFL World Tournament Finals held on August 1st in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Pursuant to PFL rules and regulations, Kabalayev has been disqualified from the 2025 PFL World Tournament. As a result of the disqualification under PFL rules, Kabalayev forfeits the distinction of 2025 PFL Featherweight Tournament Champion, the championship belt, and all associated bonus awards. It's very interesting. The PFL maintains a zero tolerance policy toward the use of performance-enhancing substances and remains fully committed to the highest standards of fair competition, athlete safety, and integrity in the sport. He is, of course, from Habib's team, who there is a lot of speculation about out there, which has been... obviously ramping up here, but crazy one, Chuck. Another top tier guy gets done, and the reactions online have been pretty fierce here. Like, I know we've got a few there, Jordan. Different reactions. Brendan Loughnane lost to this guy in 2021, and you know Brendan's been a great success story, a legend of the UK scene, a great fighter for PFL. But this is what he's saying: this fight literally cost me millions of dollars. Lost a split decision, and that was in 2021, to a known cheater. The sport is wild. We also saw, was it Aljamain Sterling weighing in on this? Aljo, people think these drug tests stop fighters or any athlete from cheating. LOL. Y'all kill me. There's so many people on shit still. I respect all athletes, sorry, but how do you respect willful cheating? You can't and you shouldn't. And, you know, I'm looking through the comments on this as like active UFC fighters like Mason Jones saying like you should be banned for life once this happens. Of course.
What did he get?
I think it's 6 months.
But what did he? What was in his system?
I don't. Let me see. I don't think that has been revealed. I think okay. This is the only stuff that's.
I mean,
come
these
out.
Are like the harshness of what they're saying here. I mean, I get it. Like if PFL's taking that action, right? It's got to be something substantial, I would think, because I don't, you know, and then, but these reactions, I'm like, what if it's...
Oh, it's EPO.
Oh, okay. There you go, then.
I think it's okay. EPO. Let me just make sure about that. I think I saw it earlier, and now I just shouted that out there, and I'm not sure, and I'm afraid. Yes, tested positive for recombinant erythropoietin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That is. Well, it's a... we've been around this a long time, and you always hear the whisperings of everything kind of going on, and I'm always surprised we don't hear. Sometimes I'm like, are they really testing people like they used to? Are they even testing as much as they used to? And then so when somebody gets popped, you're like, I guess they are. But then you're always like, I'm surprised that it's not more frequent, you know? but that's a... that's bad for it's bad for the PFL, who's, you know, like you're trying to be that kind of viable number two, and you've got the names that you have that are, you know, you're showcasing, and to get one of those to have now an asterisk to it is not good. It's just that's just bad for everybody, right? It's just bad for everybody.
Yeah, it's. I'm interested in this because there is an Irish fighter. I know we were speaking briefly before we went live. Will Flurry, who I know well, who I covered for a long time, he failed a drug test with PFL during the light heavyweight tournament a few years back. But since then, he's gone on to have great success with Octagon. Do you know that Eastern European promotion?
Oh, yeah,
with the
of course.
Big shows, all that stuff. He's like one of the faces of the promotion now. But it's like you never shake that. You know, like, I don't know, like, am I wrong in thinking that, is there any athlete that has successfully kind of completely shaken this? I know, obviously, like, someone brought up to me today, we were speaking about this, and they brought up Islam Makhachev, who failed the drug test once, but he was cleared later. And then yeah. They were like, well, what about Usman Nurmagomedov, who fought Paul Hughes? He failed for a medication and then volunteered himself to the VADA list for a year to clear his name. You know, VADA...
Right. Right.
You know, just to be like, look, I just want to make sure everybody thinks. And that's when he actually fought Paul Hughes, I believe, was that January. The first fight was just after that 12-month stint. I mean, not to say like that's absolved him completely, but...
I mean, you'll hear rumblings on guys like John Jones even, right? Because he...
Oh, yeah. He, rumblings. You
know, but I'm saying like that he still carries the same stigma for some people like that. Once yeah. He's a cheat, you're a cheat forever, you know? Some people are going to hold that. It's funny because... What's this cat's name? The dude from PFL?
Mavlid Kabalayev.
So he had fought Daniel Pineda, remember back in like 2019, got knocked out. I think it would have been his only loss, but that dude got busted. He popped hot for some substance and ended up having a UFC career and kind of moving on from that. So, I mean, like, I feel like it almost comes down to the size of your own star, because I'm like, if you're a person who is very like... in the spotlight of John Jones, well, it's going to be remembered a little more by a wider swath of people. And this kind of thing, especially in the PFL, where I don't even sure diehards pay that close of attention sometimes to what's going on in the PFL, you may be able to survive this, right? Like, we'll see. But it kind of sucks because this dude he hadn't lost. I mean, that was his one loss. The one I'm talking about.
Oh,
it was
a savage.
Overturned. He's a savage. So it's like, and he comes from that team. And... They've kind of been taking some L's in these other ways, like that whole Habib, you know, the whole aura. It's kind of taken some bruising over the course of the last year or two. It's an interesting thing. I never thought they almost felt invulnerable for a long time, you know?
Yeah. It's in a way, like, as much as it's like a bad thing for PFL, because this guy is obviously a brilliant, brilliant fighter they have on their roster, it's kind of also like, you know, especially when they go to Dubai, right? Like when they go to Dubai and they have the Nurmagomedovs on there, there's this idea that it's like, it's their show. In the same way as like, you know, the Dublin shows for Bellator back in the day were like, they're SBG's shows. Oh, you better not fight an SBG guy on that show. You know, like this is essentially for them. It's kind of like, it's kind of good in a way that they're like, we're calling this shit out. Like this guy's going to be punished. I don't know if you're going to get that tournament prize money back. I don't know how that works. If he's like, well, I fucking spent it. Like, what are we going to do here? You know, but in a way.
It's one way for PFL to make some more money, huh? Give us back our money.
They just, everyone that wins the tournament is like, he's on drugs. But, you know, I am giving PFL a big chance this year. Like they're going to Madrid. The new COO talked to Ariel on his show. I was very impressed with him. And they have something in Europe, if not, obviously, in America. So, you know.
Well, they have a plan. Going into this year, I was like, I don't know what the hell they're doing. Did anybody know what the hell they were doing?
No. And I think it's their last chance. I don't think any fan is like, oh, you know, let's see how long this can go. If they don't hit this year, it's going to be a struggle for them. And it already is a struggle, but there's a kind of renewed optimism around PFL. And they really have to knock it out of the park this year. So.
Yeah.
Here's to hope.
Here's to hope.
Yeah. It's a hopeful time of year, of course.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Please, sir. No, wrong. We've spoke about Zuckerberg and how brilliant of a talent he is before on this show. You know, mixing up with Alex Pereira. We saw it. You know, he take Pereira down? Absolutely, he did.
And he did.
Pereira better be fucking careful or he might come into the light heavyweight division and shut his whole legacy down. But here he is. training with Marab, scoring some. Look at this. Marab, he has him backing up. Takedown. Yeah, takes down Marab. What does Marab do in reply? Oh, he's nearly got the back, Marab. You can't let this happen on camera. What's going on? Slap. That is a full.
I watched the full, like, kind of tape, and I mean, just kind of off naked eye one watching, I scored it for Zuck. Like, I thought he actually won that, you know?
Is the renewed interest in the Elon Musk v. Mark Zuckerberg fight.
Not until we see some Elon footage.
Oh my God, yeah, what the fuck? Apparently, didn't he used to say he was a street fighter back in the day or something? Don't believe that. Mm-mm. Never. I knew some street fighters growing up, Chuck. None of them
look like that.
None of them are quite like Elon Musk in any fathomable way.
I do think it's... I mean, the dude loves MMA, like this guy's like... I mean, like, I saw him when I went to the Pereira fight, you know, sitting there cage side. It's just, I mean, I give him that. Like, he seems to really, really love it. It's not like just as some passing fancy. He seems to like, you know, look at that footwork. You look he's...
Undeniable. You know? Like, the ability is undeniable, but aside from that, isn't it weird that these... Oh, Aljamain. We've already heard from Aljamain about the drug test. Let's hear what he has to say about Zuck. Zuck did great. There you go. Shut my mouth. Marab gave him a real-life full MMA experience without going too hard. Okay. On the power, but gave him intensity, speed, and great control. Zuck stayed in it. He received his instructions and did his best as a very successful man. It was fascinating. I love the sport of what we do. Remember, he does not need to do this at all. I always respected him and success, and now that respect is even higher. It's like what I used to get in the report card back from school when I was in junior infants or whatever, you kindergarten or whatever you guys call it over there. My God.
Well, yeah. I mean, they like Zuck. I'm not 100% sure why, but.
I have a good idea.
Yeah, I do kind of understand.
Is it weird that these billionaires use, like, our sport to, like...
All the time, man.
It's so fucking weird. Like, you know, I'm actually...
Did you see Kadyrov take down Chimaev? I'm just asking, because that's what the... Also very similar, right?
Yeah, Kadyrov had, like, Chimaev getting beaten up by his teenage children. Like, I have no idea, like, what the fuck?
There's... Something happens, like... I don't know what it is.
Like, Chimaev is nearly ready to bulldoze Ian Garry through several walls for touching his back. I was supposed to be like, this teenager fucked him up. You know, it's interesting. But yeah, that's probably for another day. It's Christmas, as we said.
Yeah,
practice. Time of goodwill, a time of cheer, Chuck. We got some good news about Cain Velasquez. Apparently, eligible for parole in February. Some pictures of him surfaced in prison there. He is looking in fantastic shape. I mean, I know it's a crazy, crazy story, but I think I'm with most of the MMA community here by saying, like, we're very happy to hear that this man has an exit in sight from the judicial system.
Yeah, 100%. And this, the incident in question that he's in, serving for, was in 2022, right? And there was at that point, when that happened, it was a shock, remember? We're all like, what? Yeah. Oh, my God. And then you hear the details, and you're like, well, what is a father supposed to do? And it wasn't, you know, you can empathize with why he lost his, you know, why he did what he did, you know? But when it was happening, I was really worried we wouldn't hear from him for many, many, many years. I was afraid that he would go away for, you know, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years. The fact that we're at the back of 2025 and we're having this conversation that in a couple of months he could be out, it's the best case scenario for that guy. And have you talked to him before? Like, briefly.
I've never like sat down for a formal interview with him. I've met him once.
Not the kind of guy. And I get it, man.
Disarmingly, like, polite person.
Very polite. And that's all I was going to say. Like, he's salt of the earth type of guy. Always had great conversation with him. If you talk to anybody who's really hung around him, like, you know, DC and all those guys up in that area, like, they all have that same opinion. And I know he's got big love from the MMA community. I had actually really wanted to do a piece, knowing that he wouldn't be in the prison for very long, where you visit him there and you do something like that, because obviously he's not on social media, he's not doing this thing, and I thought it could work. But it was very difficult to kind of arrange, as you can imagine. And I do think that they might be working on some kind of documentary or something like that with him. So I feel like there's something in the works that'll probably give us a behind the scenes look as to how he's been handling all of this.
Chuck, you got it. No, we got to revisit this. We have got to get you out there before February.
Oh, man, I wanted to. But you only if he gets out in February, that's only 2 months from now, PT.
I know. But I want to somehow implant you into that situation, whether he likes it or not. Just get you over there. Please speak to Chuck Kane. Come on.
Yeah.
Ariel, pull some fucking strings here. Come on. We can get the, we can make this happen. That's pretty much all we've got. This is the end of the crack for 2025. We want to thank you all for listening. It's been a fantastic adventure. And thank you so much to Chuck and Ben for doing this with me every week. And On Air Jordan, the legend, the legendary Oscar Losef, everyone on the team, Andy, who had to chip in when Jordan was on his 6 month vacation. Fair play, Jordan. We all need vacations, you know. I'm not saying anything about that. Just remember, though, that we had a choice to go to Miami, me and Chuck, Ben, everyone. And we were like, no.
Pass.
We are not going to do that. Boys in the back, this usual slot, they didn't think twice. They were gone. Jordan, how quickly can you speak on this just for a second? How quickly did those guys turn down the opportunity to do their own show today with me left here to pick up the pieces with Chuck? He's not speaking. No, he's not going to come.
My.
Look, there. That's what I'm saying. The crack would never do that to you people, you know? There's actually, if you are starved, and I know we're doing a show on Monday still, but I'm just saying, if you are starved for UFC, I mean MMA, Jesus, over the Christmas period, Octagon on December 28th with the aforementioned Will Fleury will be on. He is fighting Martin Boudet, who you'll remember was famously cut after he beat Buchecha. So it's a big time fight for Fleury, a man who still believes the UFC window is open. I'm going to try and get a word with Will Fleury. He is a great name. It's Will fucking Fleury. They make the announcer say that before they go, and here he is, Will fucking Fleury.
Oh, man. See, that was what Jim Miller shtick should have been for the longest time. We were always like, that's got to be your, you know, your nickname. But Bruce Buffer would not do it. He would not go along.
Too classy. Well, yeah. Octagon, they don't have them same restrictions. What's the Christmas going to be like for you, Chuck? Denver Broncos got a few games. These are looking
Broncos
good
play on Christmas night at Kansas City. So
well, you're going to win that.
That should be fun. Well, they should now. I mean, there's no Patrick Mahomes, so it's that should happen. But we'll be in actually, I won't be too far from there. I'm going to be in St. Louis, wife's family, hanging out there in the middle of the country, you know, where Budweiser is brewed right there. And everybody's homes.
Do you take turns going like to your family or Rebecca's, like, based on, is that usually the trick, or do you usually host it yourselves, or what happens?
I'd say traditionally there are plenty of years we went to both, but those days are past, man. We go to Denver, we go to St. Louis. Now it's kind of one or the other, but it's been St. Louis the last couple of times for various reasons. But yeah. How about you? You stick around there?
I stay in Blanche, and I used to complain about having to move around Blanche a lot, like, and now I'm listening to this going, no, you know, I had it pretty good. We do a Christmas breakfast here, me and Elaine do, and then we'll go to my parents' house for dinner, and then the next day we'll go to Elaine's mom and dad's for dinner. So it's a pretty wholesome time. You know what I mean?
That's good, man. That's good.
George, your first Christmas as a father as well. I mean, geez, it's all going here, mate. It's going to be a wild one.
Take pictures.
He's not. He's just not. He doesn't care.
Well, okay.
Well, look. This is what we have. Do we have any super chats, Jordan, before we leave these beautiful people? Oh, tearing the ass.
Johnny Sloan.
24-inch doves. Merry, happy Christmas, Petey and Chuck. I say happy Christmas. People don't like that shit.
They don't like it.
No. But happy Christmas to you, 24-inch doves. Merry Christmas.
It have to be merry?
Merry. I just never use the word merry anyway, you know? So it doesn't feel right.
Well, nobody does unless they're saying Merry Christmas.
That's fair. He was merry. You'd say, like, if they were like, he was shit-faced last night, they'd say, yeah, he was just a bit merry. No?
I like that, but no, I have not used it that way. I might start using that. It's pretty good.
Anything else there on air, Jordan? The crack equals BIT for grown-ups. Love y'all. Oh, look at that garlic laying down some knowledge with some Swedish currency, I believe. Gotta love it. I mean,
all that money must go to Jordan. I don't know.
Jordan, that's where he gets all them vacations.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably planning right now, where am I going to go next? It was the Bahamas, and I believe he was in Tokyo for a little while this year.
Yeah.
Eric. Yeah, Drake, the new champion. The new champion.
Yeah.
The champion of our cause. Yeah.
It probably should.
It shouldn't go to big time Ben Folks, I'll tell you that much. He doesn't need
any
money.
He's got a lot
of
money as is.
All right. These B-Dog. Thank you for a year of laughter on unmatched curls, PT. Oh, thank you. Thank you. The curls had a hard time. We had a real growing this year, I feel. You know, we took it a new direction. Happy holidays to all the Unground crew, including, wow, you didn't have to be that nice, but I mean, he is a lovely guy sometimes, including Ben Big Time Folks. I mean, does he deserve that?
No, but I mean, we'll appreciate it.
Appreciate it. That all we got, Jordan? Oh my God, there's the music. Well, look, lads, it's been a wonderful year. Have a fantastic, have a Merry Christmas. There you go. It feels nice. Chuck, I love you very much. I hope you and yours have a fantastic holiday.
Likewise.
Conor, Jordan, Oscar, Losev, all of you have a wonderful time. Hope Ben has a nice one too, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah.
We've been Pete, Carol, and Chuck Mendenhall. We love you so much. Enjoy the holidays, and we'll be back in January. Mwah.